Welcome to Lord Johnlander, the Outlander podcast for Lord John fans, where we talk about all things Outlander, but especially about Jaime and his Sassenach.
And sometimes we talk about Claire, too.
For however long it takes, we'll lead you on a journey so chaotic, you'll question every life choice that led you to be here today. And like the Hotel California, you can check out anytime, but you can never leave.
We may not be the Outlander podcast you wanted, but we will be the Outlander podcast you didn't know you needed.
Now, before we get into it, this is your one and only warning that show and book spoilers are lurking around every corner. We're going to spoil stuff from future seasons, future books, and our own brains.
Remember, if you can't prove our headcanon didn't happen, then we can only assume that it did.
If you make it through the episode in one piece, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your burning questions, wild theories, thick prompts, flattering compliments, or whatever's on your mind. You can contact us on Twitter and Tumblr at Lord Johnlander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com, where you'll also find our archived episodes, teasers, thick recs, and more.
Hello, welcome to Lord Johnlander back for season two.
Woohoo!
I'm Mistress Pandora. You can call me Pan because it's still a mouthful. And my co-host.
I'm Beth. I've decided to just be Beth.
Just Beth. I'll keep being difficult.
I mean, you know where to find me on social media otherwise. So just, I'm Beth.
So it'll be what, the 7th of October when this episode airs. And we'll have been recording for a couple of weeks anyway. We have got some stuff planned for season two that it never occurred to us to actually plan for season one because we were making all of that shit up as we went. Oh, we still are, to be perfectly clear. We are still making it all up as we go. But we have some new segments. We are, this season, I think we're going to actually retire the Jaime Fraser erection scale.
For now. For this season, yeah.
It'll be back.
And we've added some new sections. We are going to have a, what are we calling it? Like a mailbag, mail call.
Yeah.
We're going to be, it's like a Blue's Clues.
I was just thinking Blue's Clues.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Okay. Okay. So we're going to be, we're starting off great.
I'm okay. Go on without me. Okay, we've spent the last, let's just be honest, we'll just own it. We have spent the last hour having technological difficulties, so we've already been giggling at each other for the last hour.
Oh god, so much for our brand new organized fancy show that lasted 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Not even anyway, no. So
sorry, continue.
We're going to have a mail call feature where we're going to take any of your questions that you have either on social media or through our website contact form and answer them. So, you know, right off the bat, we want to encourage you to follow us on social media if you don't. And you can find us. The main places are Tumblr and Twitter. We are on Instagram and TikTok, but the messaging can be a little different there. And you can use the ask feature on Tumblr. You can message us on either of those apps. And then we also have a contact form on our website, which is at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact us. That's all one word, contact us. You can fill that out and we will, we might feature your question on a future episode. So we've got that. And we've got a couple other new episode just little features that we're going to be bouncing around, especially here at the beginning of the season. And hopefully, you know, they won't flop and we'll be able to keep doing them. But, you know, we'll get there. You'll see. You'll see them when you see them.
Or maybe they will flop, but we'll have fun and keep doing it anyway. And y'all are just going to have to deal with it.
Right.
That's yeah. That's a distinct possibility.
It's probably the highest probability.
It's the highest probability for sure. Question though. So we still have anonymous messaging turned off on Tumblr for very good reasons. And I don't really see that changing. Is the contact us form on the WordPress site, is that anonymous potentially?
So it is not anonymous. You have to give your name and email. That's a WordPress rule, not ours. But if you just put in the form that you want to remain anonymous, we promise we will not read your name on air. Same thing even in the Tumblr form. So
yeah, absolutely.
If you just put in the message that you want to be anonymous and we won't say your name, we cannot turn on anonymous questions in Tumblr for reasons. we promise we won't say your name if you don't want us to.
Unless you're a troll, in which case we are going to roast the shit out of you.
Oh, that puts you on blast. Absolutely. The whole,
so that's the fastest way to get an episode dedicated to you is be a troll. Have we threatened our listeners enough? I think we're safe.
Yeah, I think we're good. We could probably get started. I think too, you're going to find that our discussion, at least what we're trying to do, is it's still going to go off the rails. It's still going to be shenanigans, but we're going to try to do it in a little bit more of an organized structure.
Yeah. Try being the operative word. But I will say that two of my favorite episodes from last season were the last two that we put the most work into organizing.
Yeah. Yeah. It does actually help.
Damn. You have to do homework.
I know. And then one other thing about our plan for the season, we'll see how it goes. And we talked about this at the end of the finale, but in case you missed it or haven't had a chance to listen or what have you, are you crazy? Go back and listen. It was awesome. But also, season two is split into two nice, neat parts in the show. So given the holidays are right around the corner, believe it or not, we are going to kind of use that to our advantage. And we're going to try to get the first half of the season, all the Paris episodes in before Thanksgiving for Americans.
That's the end of November for those of you across the pond or outside of the US.
Yep. And then we're going to go on a hiatus until after New Year's so that we can spend time with our families, you can spend time with your families and not have to worry about when am I going to listen to Lord John Lander, which I know is like always at the top of your mind. So let your mind be at ease. We've got you.
Yes, we absolutely do. So we're going to jump right into season two. The first episode of Outlander season two is Through a Glass Darkly.
And let's just kind of lay this on the table right now. Every single person ever who has seen this first episode of season two, I guarantee has hit the back button and been like, am I on the right season? What's happening?
I was so freaking confused.
We've all done it.
To the point that I actually kind of forgot that's how this season started. Because once again, I have not seen, there is one episode this season I have seen more than once. And it wasn't this one, but I forgot. I completely forgot. I was like, because she's back in the 1940s.
Well, and the book kind of does the same thing, except it starts in the 60s. And again, you're like, did I order the right book? I'm pretty sure it said this was the second book.
checking the page numbers. Like, did this get, is a signature yes. backwards? What happened? I mentioned this to you on Discord, but when I was watching this episode again, I was watching it from not Claire's point of view, but random Scotsman number 7, who she meets in the middle of the road. And this is the most bonkers freaking thing. I laughed so inappropriately. And like, okay, she's really traumatized and heartbroken and everything. And I'm just like laughing my ass off. I'm like, I am such a bad person. I'm going to hell. I don't care. But this is funny from his perspective.
Funny or scary? I mean,
both.
It's like, I mean, if you have no concept of the backstory and why she is like in hysterics, right? Which is, that's the random Scotsman number 7 or whatever. The crazy lady is in the middle of the road, right?
Weeping over 200-year-old news.
Yeah, it's, and it's, me laughing at it is not at all like trying to take away from how serious this is for her and how truly broken she is. But at the same time, when you just kind of detach yourself a little from that, it's like, who won the Battle of Culloden? just imagine for Americans, right? Just imagine you're like, driving along and some dude or woman in like, old fashioned clothes is like, who won the American Revolution? After you told him what year it is. But that said, she is obviously in a very bad place, yes. Physically and mentally. And they don't really talk about this much in the book, but they don't really talk about this in the show, but it's really emphasized in the book. Like, they're like starving. So the, and this was like a real thing that happened because the Scottish soldiers had to winter over, kind of in the army camps, and they did not fare very well. So by the time the Battle of Culloden came around in April, they were so weakened and decimated by hunger, starvation, disease. I mean, that played a very big part in the losing of that battle, almost as much as the terrain and all of that and the weapons and stuff, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, so they were like starving. And I don't know why they kind of choose to not talk about that part really in the show, except like a little teeny bit. But yeah.
She was severely malnourished when she got back.
Yep. And, and the doctor is like, tells Frank, she's just like dehydrated, but perfectly healthy otherwise. And I'm like,
Is she though?
Okay, dude.
It's that whole historical authenticity thing that we care so very much about. Ooh.
Right.
So when Frank walks into the hospital room where Claire is, she catches his reflection in the window, and she has a really visceral like startle response.
Yeah, I mean she even says like, for, she says like, how, right? Yeah. Like she, because I mean, of course, like she's just like, all she's known for the last like 2.5 years is that face is Blackjack Randall, right? Yeah. So really scary. And I know she kept stuff from Frank, one, because Frank didn't want to hear it, and I think two, she kind of, and I think I'm getting this from like one of the books, but I think she kept it from Frank how much of a bad person Blackjack Randall was, because like Frank, she kind of felt like she didn't want to disappoint Frank because he had like felt this deep connection with his ancestry and stuff. Yeah. But it probably would have helped if he understood,
right?
That, you know, his face was very triggering. But I mean, Claire,
I need
just,
that fic.
She's yeah, right. Go. But I think that, Claire's just in such a bad place, and she seems to be having a harder time adjusting to the 20th century than she did when she went to the 18th century. Like the 18th century, yeah. She was like a little discombobulated until mm-hmm. she found out when she was. But once she found out when she was, like, she was like, it didn't take her a long period of adjustment to the time. Like there were adjustments yeah. to like being without Frank and stuff, but like it was pretty easy. But you know, when Frank comes in, there's a radio playing and Claire's finally like, turn off that noise or something. And mm-hmm. I'm like, thank you. Cause it was bothering me too. And then the car is going by and stuff. And she says, oh, it's so noisy here. And I really related to Claire in that moment.
You know, I can relate to this actually both ways. So early this year, like in January, we had a horrific snowstorm come through, and our houses here in the technical South, I don't actually live in the South.
You're really like mid-Atlantic.
The South won't claim this part of Virginia. But we had this horrific snowstorm come through, and we lost power. We were without power for a full week, and our house is not designed to keep in the heat. It's designed to survive, like, you know, to withstand a hot summer. Awesome. Not, oh shit, my phone's not on silent.
I thought we had a guest star for a minute.
That's my notification tone. My husband just texted me.
Oh God, we're doing great today. Season two's great.
You got this. Anyway, so we were without power for a solid week, and we don't have like our cooking. Everything is electric, and we don't have a generator, and so we were old school roughing it. It's amazing how fast, because you know how like the world just gets really quiet, like deafeningly quiet when the power yeah. goes out. And then when the sun goes down, oh boy, does it get dark. So, yeah. but my point is we were able to adjust pretty, not saying that situation was easy because it absolutely sucked. We don't even have a fireplace. Like we were freaking cold, but we adjusted to not having light, to not having sound very fast.
Yeah.
But it was noisy when it came back on. Like hearing the electricity hum. And that was just a week. That was just a week without it. Imagine going, what, 2.5-3 years without it.
Yeah. I mean, even like if I've woken up in the middle of the night, like every now and then, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and the power's out mm-hmm. and it's so quiet. But like, because you woke up, you like don't even, you're just like, oh, something's different. And then it's like the power comes back on and all of a sudden it's like everything's whirring and beeping and yeah, it's crazy.
Like our lizard brains are still comfortable in the quiet dark.
I think that's one of the reasons I like going. I don't go tent camping anymore, but I used to when I was a kid, and we'll always rent cabins. Like I have mm-hmm. pretty good access to the Adirondacks where I live. So, you know, we'll get a cabin in the Adirondacks, and there's just something about like sitting outside with just the fire going and the quiet. It's just like, it settles my brain like nothing else. And you know how yeah. chaotic my brain is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a note about this. Claire keeps saying, I know he's dead, talking about Jamie.
Yeah. And that always kind of bothered me. And it's, I mean, this is like the first time she says it, but I mean, it's kind of like a theme. Like, they say it a lot throughout the series. I remember like Brianna saying it when during Echo and, or not, no, not during Echo. I'm sorry. During, is it Echo? I don't want to either Echo or Written in My Own Heart's Blood. And, saying, you know, she like knew her parents were dead in reality because they were living like, you know, 200 years before. But like, that never sat right with me, because once you've opened up the possibility of like parallel timelines where you can kind of like jump between the tracks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not dead because you could go to them at any time. Although I guess with Claire, though, she actually, you know, that ruined it, because I forgot. Claire actually does think he's dead, like for real, real. Like he died in Culloden. So, yeah. But other instances, my point stands.
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. But no, she thinks he's dead. That's different, right, though, than Jesse's. And like, would she be able to go find the real version of his, like his actual grave? Probably, if she knew where to look.
Right. Well,
so technically, yes, but also no.
But like the problem with that, though, is that, oh, okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, it's also complicated because, yeah, no matter what, she could find a grave for him, right? But, yeah. Ugh. Time travel shit.
Damn. Yeah. My eyes just glazed over. Okay.
And we'll talk more about that gravestone in season 3.
We might get to it sooner rather than later. Who knows?
I was going to say, what struck me so much about this episode, though, is that this episode has some of the single most worst advice I have ever heard in my life. And also, like, the Reverend and Mrs. Graham may possibly be the two single most important characters in the entire series, for the trajectory of the series, right? So Mrs. Graham's advice, love her, but I will never forgive her, is basically push all your feelings down, move on, don't chase ghosts. You've got a real flesh and blood man here, you know, here for you. And then the Reverend tells Frank, after Claire tells Frank that she's pregnant, that, you know, he says children accept the reality of which they're given, right? Which is true, but like, that doesn't mean that you should actually lie to them. So he, you know, he basically, his advice is just like, lie to Brianna and just tell her you're her real father, which was kind of a hard sell considering like that he's a like average sized man with dark hair.
I don't think that's what either of them said, though.
You don't think so?
I don't. So Mrs. Graham told Claire not to chase ghosts. True. But what I think she meant was, don't drive yourself insane until you die looking for somebody who may not be findable. I think, like, the word she was saying to Claire sounded more like, you're right, he probably, you know, he is dead technically. Whether he survived the battle or not is another story entirely, and you may never find out the answer to that. Grieve it. Mourn it. You're a widow now. Like, that's more how I interpreted her advice. And I don't think the Reverend said lie to the kid.
It was implied.
It was not implied. It was
heavily implied.
The difference here is that, because he was talking about Roger knowing, right, that he's not his father, but But Roger also remembers his parents. Yeah. Just a tiny bit. Like, he's old enough to remember them before they died in the Blitz. Barely. So yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that if you... And he was saying that very pointedly to Frank, like, you know, wink, wink, I'm pretending I'm talking about Roger, but I'm really talking about your situation. And, you know, so, but if, even though Brianna obviously would never remember Jamie, and would only know Frank as her father, I don't think that's a good enough reason to not tell her the truth when she's old enough, when it's age appropriate. You know, I just don't think that should be withheld.
I mean, but, I agree with you. Yeah. I'm not saying that the strategy was the best. I'm just saying, I don't think that's what the reverend said.
I mean, he was like trying to compare Frank to like, Jesus, or, well, I guess the baby to Jesus. I don't.
Yeah.
Like, and Frank is Mary Joseph. And Joseph.
Frank didn't take that well.
No.
He didn't like that analogy.
Which I can't blame him. Like, he's like, this is not at all what's happening to me. And then back to Mrs. Graham, though. Like, I do think, though, she was telling Claire, like, okay, so whatever her intention was, the result of it was that Claire just stopped looking completely. And I know she has her reasons. Part of the reasons are Frank. Part of the reasons are kind of for Brianna's sake. Part of the reason is because she's compartmentalizes and she just kind of needs to put Jamie away in a box on a shelf so that she can live her life. But, like, I always just kind of think, like, you know, and there's, like, a gajillion fics written about this, right? That where she keeps looking and is able to find him and stuff. So, maybe things would have been different if those two busybodies hadn't stuck their nose in it. That's all I'm saying. Oh, God.
We haven't gotten to talk about this for quite a while, but I'm completely switching gears. Did Frank and the Reverend, after Frank had his little temper tantrum in the garage or whatever it was, did their dynamic feel like we've never been married, but we're exes now to you?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, it kind of felt that way a little bit when Frank gave up in season one.
Oh, totally.
But then this felt even more like kind of final, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, we are never, ever getting back together.
I'm glad you said the whole thing because I would have had to sing it and nobody wants that today.
I thought about singing again, but then I'm like, I already sang Blue's Clues, so maybe that'll be a shtick for me. Maybe I'll sing something every episode.
There's an idea. We all need our quirks.
Oh, God. I'm one of those people that if we're talking like, you know, in just a regular conversation, I will be breaking out in song if you say something that is like lyrics to a song I know, or I will be quoting a TV show if what you said reminds me of that TV show. So that's
okay. I'm not going to hold it back anymore because I do the same thing.
It's just like, this will be happening. If you're going to be my friend, you must accept that I will just randomly break out into song. It's okay.
Our life is now a musical.
Oh, God. It would be so much better if it was like, you know, just like freaking disagreements can be like solved with like dance-offs and duets and stuff. Like,
there's no reason why it can't.
I'm just thinking about West Side Story, like the Sharks and the Jets, like do 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 do. Okay, I'll stop. Anyway, this is totally off track, but I'm going to tell the story anyways. So my aunt used to teach at a juvie, basically. Mm-hmm. And she was an English teacher, and she did a lot of things, you know, with the students to try to engage them. And one of the things she did at one point was decided to put on a play, and she picked West Side Story. And I remember her telling me, because this is like before I was even born. And I remember her telling me like that she'd be like, she'd have to be like, okay, guys, seriously, like, is that how you would say that in real life? Like, vamanos? No, you'd be like, vamanos. She was trying to get them to like draw from their real life experiences while at the same time singing and dancing. I don't know. She tried.
I can see the connection. It's important to be able, you know, if you have the relevant experiences, it's important to be able to pull them in for your craft, whatever your craft may be.
She also taught somebody that was ended up becoming very famous while he was in juvie. Now, he didn't come famous while he was in juvie. I mean, he became famous, and he also she taught him when he was in juvie.
Happened to be.
But anyway. Anyway.
So shall we transition back to the episode? Yes. See what I did? That's your cue.
Yes. It's great. So Frank is an asshole.
What?
And
that's not what I meant. No, wait. Are we skipping this? Are we going to point counterpoint now?
Oh, should we do that after we talk about the whole episode and then go back? I was just thinking because it's like part of the first part of the episode.
Sure. We spoiled the surprise now.
We're still working out the kinks, guys. Sorry.
Just gonna let it be kinky.
Yeah, so we're gonna do a little point counterpoint kind of break in each of our episodes, hopefully. And today my point is Frank is an asshole. So first piece of evidence. When Claire asked, and this is a small thing, but it bothered me. When Claire asked him about Mrs. Graham when they're at the hospital, like she's like, oh, is Mrs. Graham still in the Reverend's employ? He looks like he can't even remember who she is, as if, you know, she wasn't like a big part of their lives. And especially after Claire disappeared and she told him the whole story about the stones and shit. Like, I was like, dude, she's not beneath you because she's like a domestic servant. You know,
okay. This is such a stretch. This might be worse than your whole Frank's a Nazi thing from episode one.
That was a joke.
No. So, no. Think about, okay, so I would say that Claire is the asshole in this situation because he has spent the last 2 years thinking about Claire, and she's not thinking about him at all. She sees him, and the first thing she wants to know is, does Mrs. Graham still work for Reverend Wakefield? What?
That was not the first thing she wanted to know.
Okay, I take that back. The first thing she wanted to know was, why are you alive, you rat bastard? But she wasn't thinking about Frank.
But, like, come on. I mean, he can't blame her for that. She's obviously discombobulated, confused, like, you know. So even if, like, he doesn't understand why she's asking, like, he should be giving her a little bit of grace. She literally was just picked up off the road by random Scotsman number 7
because she was raving like a lunatic.
Oh, she hasn't stopped yet. But what's that? Like, I said she hasn't stopped yet. She hasn't stopped raving like a lunatic. She calmed it down. But no, so my point, though, is he was just shocked that she wasn't as excited to see him as he is to see her. Because, like, his face fell. Like, he was just disappointed that she wasn't happy to see him.
I didn't see it that way.
Okay. What's your next point that I'm going to disagree with?
When he loses his temper and points his finger in her face. And then, like, a little bit later, when she tells him she's pregnant and the baby isn't his, he, like, pulls his fucking fist back and is, like, way just hovering over her and is ready to hit her. That's okay. Bullshit.
I'm not excusing his reaction. However, he just went through all the stages of grief in less than a second. Because she tells him that she's pregnant. Obviously, his first thought is, my wife is pregnant. This is wonderful. And then she snatches that away from him in a really cold way. So I'm again going with Claire's the asshole. He is not right for raising his fist. He didn't swing it, though. He's not right for getting angry. Well, he's not right for exploding at her. Anger is completely completely understandable, I think. But, like, I can excuse some of it. Not necessarily the behavior, but the emotion.
I feel like this is turning into, is Claire the asshole point?
But I think so.
But, like, think of it from her perspective.
Yeah, she's trying to drive him away.
She's been gone for 2.5 years. And the love of her life has put a baby in her. And the first thing Frank thinks is that it's somehow his.
Like, the first thing Frank thinks is it's a good thing.
Well, no, he says how.
Yes.
Like, he literally thinks it's his. And then she doesn't snatch it away from him. She just tells him.
Oh, she had truth. That snotty look on her face, though. She was. I might have gotten in her face too over that one.
She gets a little grace for having just traveled through time and
only
lost
a tiny
the
bit
of her life. I'm sorry. Okay,
a little bit, but he gets some grace too because she is the love of his life, and she's treating him like crap.
Do you think he was cheating on her? Or not even, I won't even call it cheating. Do you think he was dating?
I don't
while
think
she was
so.
Gone?
I don't think I so. Do. Maybe a little, Frank, but I don't.
Frank can't keep it in his pants, Randall. He was definitely dating other women. Maybe not right away, but I
definitely
bet by the
not
time,
right away.
But I bet by the time Claire showed back up, he'd been. And I'm not faulting him for that. I'm just saying.
No, Claire was. Claire moved on.
Yeah, right. Like, so I'm not faulting him for that, but I also think that, like, I get that he's got a lot of emotions going on too, but, like, also does Claire, right? Like, you know, I don't think she's saying those things to hurt him. I do agree that she's trying to drive him away, but I don't think she's trying to drive him away in, like, a sinister way. I think she's trying to, like, I'm just going to download all the reality of our situation to you so that you have every piece of information in front of you before you make any decision.
Remember in the book, she tried to convince him to divorce her.
Yes.
And he wouldn't do it.
And that always bothered me a little because. So here's what bothers me a little bit about that. And there's like reasons behind it and I get it. But, like, I always thought, like, I mean, she could have filed for divorce, too.
She could have.
But I think what made, and she says it, actually, at some point in the episode. Like, the reason she stays with Frank and and agrees to his conditions and all of that stuff is because she promised Jamie that she would be with Frank and let Frank raise their daughter. So she's doing it because she's like trying to honor Jamie's wishes. But like in doing that, she's like setting herself up for, you know, misery. And I'm not even saying misery because Frank is an asshole. I'm just saying misery because
thanks for clarifying.
I'm just saying it's misery because it's not what she wants. Right.
Yeah.
And she knows she doesn't want it. And this is an instance where I feel like Jamie, and we'll probably talk about it when we get to that spot, but like Jamie doesn't know what he's talking about in the instance in which he makes her promise. Right. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
he doesn't. In the 40s, yes, it would still be difficult for a woman to be divorced with a child. But she could have done it. Claire could have done it. And Jamie didn't have all the facts about the 20th century when he made her make that promise, because all he's thinking about is, you know, 18th century women need to be protected. A woman without a man is like a sitting duck, you know, basically. And so it was a stupid promise to make to begin with. And I get why she made the promise, but she could have very easily not kept it for very good reasons.
So you're saying that Jamie did the thing he thought was best based on the information he had at the time?
Yes.
Okay, keep that in your head, because I'm coming back to it.
But anyway, so, I don't even know where I was going with this to loop it back to what we were talking about. But yeah, she does, in the books, try to get Frank to divorce her, because I think it's because, like, if Frank divorces her, then she didn't break Jamie's promise. It was Frank's fault, which I will totally say that that's like kind of a weak and, you know, passive aggressive martyr type thing to do.
Yeah.
But in these moments right now, I do give her quite a bit of a pass because she is just totally in grief and confused and malnourished and, you know, all of, and pregnant and all of those things.
Yeah. It's not a good combination, to be honest.
Right.
To be fair.
So back to Frank. He burned her clothes.
Okay. That was a stupid financial decision.
It was.
I'll give you that one.
And it was so spiteful. Like it just felt so spiteful to me. Like, especially being a historian and knowing the value of those clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that made it feel extra spiteful.
She handed them to him. And he looked really sad, actually.
But she didn't say burn them. Like,
no, she surrendered them.
And he could have just put them in a trunk in case he wanted to. He could have just gone and sold them, you know, which would have been less spiteful than burning them on the grill outside her window. Looks like someone's going to a barbecue.
I already had one of those.
Throwback. Anyway.
I don't think it was spiteful at all. I think he was doing what he thought was best to help her move on. I think he was doing what he thought was best with the information he had at the time. Like Jamie. No one likes it when I say that Frank and Jamie are kind of similar, actually.
I mean, I get it. I do get I do get it. But, like, I just, I don't know. I just, yeah, Frank.
I mean, I have seen, actually recently, I saw some comment on, I don't know, one of the social media things, probably the Twitter, talking about, like, Jamie kept her clothes. I'm like, well, yeah, because that was the normal, like, practice at the time, was keeping and reusing the clothes. But I will just go ahead and point out that John got her new clothes.
He did.
So she just upgrades.
John is the great, like, mediator, the great equalizer. And all, it's like point, counterpoint, John.
Yes, that is. Yes.
I think we need to rename our segment.
Point, counterpoint, John. Because John's going to come into it, especially if we're arguing over, like, how much of an asshole is Frank, or, like, was Jamie right or wrong? Like, well, okay, maybe he was right, maybe he was wrong. But let me tell you what John would have done.
Nice. Anyway, I think I'm done beating up Frank for now. I mean, I don't agree with the way that he handled some of this stuff. But you know that even when I do pop off about Frank, like, I do sometimes have sympathy for him in moments. Just not these that I just talked about.
I have rather a lot of sympathy for Frank, actually. I didn't at first. At first I did not. But over the last, I don't know, year-ish or so, I've kind of learned to appreciate him in different ways and to look at everything at a different level. I think Frank was doing what he thought was the best thing for Claire, for their now growing family. I do think that he still loves Claire, and I think that that is going to be a theme throughout the rest of the time in the 20th century. Well, you know, the 20 years that Jamie and Claire are apart. I don't think he ever stopped loving her. I think he grows to resent her quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, there are things that he did, even in this episode. Like, he let her keep the ring. If she had said, I don't want to get rid of the clothes, he would have let her keep them.
Probably, yeah.
And, like, that whole never say Jamie's name thing, that did suck. But, again, I think he was trying to do the thing that he thought was best for her. He was like, I feel like he was trying to help her move on. I know I'm in the minority, and that's okay. But I would like to point out this intentional juxtaposition that we have between Frank and Blackjack. So we are meant to see. So now we are meant to see Blackjack in Frank.
Yeah. Especially when he goes, like, full ham on, like, the garage or whatever.
Yeah. He had a little bit of a meltdown. But we just got through Wentworth and To Ransom a Man's Soul.
Yeah.
So we are already primed, especially if we were, like, binging this, you know, multiple seasons at a time. We're already primed to see Blackjack in Frank now. So we spent all of season one building that up, dashing whatever hope we had of redemption or, you know, finding some good in him, whatever. That's completely freaking gone. But we are meant to put the two together and make the same connection that Claire instinctively did when she first saw him in the window, which was fear and revulsion.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That is set up purposefully.
Yeah. And I blame that for a lot of, not all of it, but a lot of people's, like, I hate Frankness. You know, like, yeah, it's intentional. Like, you're supposed to. For no good reason.
One thing, though, about the whole conversation, though, it that kind of not our conversation, but just in general, is that the whole thing with the things that Frank does in this episode, and even, like you said, like, he thought he's doing, like, what he thinks is the best thing for her, like, that whole. All of that stuff, though, is just so mired in, like, patriarchy and, you know, like, just the man doing what he thinks is best. Right. So I feel like even if I gain some sympathy for Frank, because I agree with you, I do think he was doing what he thought was the right thing. So even when I gain that sympathy for him, I take it back, because the whole thing to me is just so patriarchal and just, you know, like, why don't we ask Claire what she thinks the best thing is for her? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, he's a product of his time, of course. But like, you know, from my my 21st century viewpoint, the whole thing is just, and not just with Frank, with Jamie too.
I was about like to say, you're going to be mad at me right. when I say that Jamie did the exact same thing.
No, I'm not mad. Like, the whole thing is just so, like, has this, like, layer of, like, patriarchy over it that it's, like, I think it's even hard for me to, like I said, even if I feel some sympathy, it just goes away instantly when I think about, like, how patriarchal it is, you know?
Yeah.
That will end that segment.
Yes.
Let's finally get out of the 20th century and go back to the 18th.
Yes.
Well, I'll let you start because you made a note about when they first get there.
Best transition in cinematic history. I will give Outlander all of the credit for that. That she's reaching for Frank's hand to get off the plane and mm-hmm. grabs Jamie's to get off the boat. That was a beautiful transition. Like, amazing.
Yeah,
it was absolutely. It was still fun. Even the second time it was fun. And I love how Murta makes it even better, because he immediately starts cussing up a storm. Is your dog growling?
I'm like over here listening to you, but also like pointing it with my finger at him, like, shut up. Petey apparently has something to say about this.
He doesn't Petey, like the French either.
Petey, no. He's a little grumpy like Murta, but he's also a little like Fergus. Not your dog Fergus, but like chaotic baby Fergus.
I'm crying.
Oh my God. I have three dogs on my bed right now. So, I mean, the fact that they have not disrupted us till this point is pretty amazing. Petey, oh, you're an asshole, Petey.
No counterpoint.
Oh God. Anyway. Yeah, I agree. Transition, amazing. Grumpy Murta.
Perfect. Oh, Blaise stinks of frogs. I love him. He's so mad. Oh my God.
I love it. He's just grumpy the entire time he's in Paris, which is like pretty much me on any vacation except when I get to go sit in the woods.
This is not me being political, but it's every time I end up in like DC. I don't like it up there. It's noisy. There's too many people.
I mean, yeah. Same thing for me with New York City, right? So, right. which I'm closer to, and just, yeah, same thing. I get there and I'm just like, all right, guys. Here's what we're gonna do.
We're gonna get in, get out, don't talk to anyone.
And actually, when I think about it, I do. I even have my own like key phrases for when I go to New York. Everything smells like piss. I say that all the time when I'm in New York. Everything smells like piss. So I guess I am Mert.
The ultimate spirit animal. I love him. Love him so much.
Oh, God.
So I'm not a humongous fan of, like, the Paris episodes. Maybe I will be after the rewatch. But I will say that Jamie's Disney princess hair is phenomenal.
Oh my God. He's like the clean shaven, the perfect auburn locks. He is because he's always like kind of dressing up more. Like I do love my rough and tumble, you know, Highlander, but then also when he's all like dressed up in his fancy clothes, I mean, hello.
Gussied up in silk and lace.
And then Claire's outfits are just out of this world.
I do love the costumes in this season. I love the costumes in this half of the season. Can you imagine if the first time that John saw Jamie, he was dressed like this? Holy shit.
Oh my God. Well, they would have become like best friends right off the bat, right? Like,
and immediately, you know? Well, immediate friends with benefits.
Oh yeah, of course. Which brings me to an interesting point, because we usually have like on our outline, you know, a little section of like what's John up to. And right before we started recording, I added a note like, I'm not sure what John's up to. He's probably still off in, what is he, in Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, yeah.
But right around this time, while Jamie and Claire are in Paris, Minnie is in Paris, though she will soon be departing for London to do a little spying on one Lord Melton. Or whatever we're calling him right now. Can't remember.
Ass face.
I told my husband today that we were going to do some like point counterpoint. And he's like, I love it when you two are like, Frank sucks. And then she's like, Hal sucks.
It's nonsensical, but it's from the heart, okay?
It works. It works, you know? But yeah, so because there's a scene in The Fugitive Green where, right at the beginning, where Jamie comes into her father's bookshop, and he's, like, passing on some information, which is part of, like, you know, like, the spying he was doing while he was in Paris. So there you go. There's a Gray family update for you. Within months, Minnie's going to be knocked up with the first baby. So Hal's going to put a baby in her.
On the hearthrug.
I love that scene.
I really like that. I really like that story.
Oh my God. Just like Hal, you know, so uptight, you know, and I had already read most of the books when I read A Fugitive Green, and all you see of Hal really is just being like this curmudgeon and uptight and doesn't want to talk about anything on, you know, whatever. And then like you open up A Fugitive Green and he just completely gets seduced by this like super strong-headed woman. And he gets outsmarted by her, seduced by her, and then he just takes her on the hearth rug. I love that about Hal.
And like, round of applause to Minerva for her quick thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Because it all happened because she got busted.
Right, right.
And boy, did that work out.
And in that moment, you're like, this man will never have the upper hand in his marriage, ever. Even if he thinks he does, he does not.
Never.
I just love it. Their love story is honestly the best. I love it. Eat it up. Mm. Anyway, so back to what Claimy and
Claimy.
That's the worst couple name ever.
Please give us alternatives. I know we kind of have said it like tongue in cheek. I mean it for serious. Like we will mention it on the podcast. Please God, anything but clammy. It sounds like Clamato juice, doesn't it?
Sounds like an STI.
I can't tell if it's chlamydia or Clamato juice, but like both are not good. Like, the clap.
I don't know. The cure, like what are we talking about? Yeah, it's terrible. But one thing I wanted to talk about a little is, you know, right at the beginning when we talked about season one, we talked about Sam Heughan's heart eyes. Right?
Yes.
And he just has the best heart eyes. He does so many like quirky things he does as an actor. And one of them is like when he plays Jamie, I don't think he does, like it's a Jamie thing that he's come up with. But like sometimes he just like he does his acting for Jamie through like just like heavy breathing or like grunting. And so it's like it's never more clear than when he's like trying to like get settled in the bed in the, you know, they get a room and he's like trying to get settled on the bed and he's just like it's almost like uncomfortable how long it goes on where he's just like grunting and sighing and breathing heavily to get on the bed and he's just like, but like at the same time, like, you also know exactly what's going through his head when he's doing that. Like, he really is acting. But it's just like, okay, please say something. Just please stop breathing.
Please stop breathing.
He does it all the time, though. He does that, like, oh, God. And I mean, it makes sense because, like, Claire, or, like, when Claire's, like, narrating the books and stuff, she'll say, like, you know, he always, like, does his Scottish grunt and like, you know, all these sounds and stuff, but to see it in action is truly a treat.
We're so blessed. We are so blessed for that. He does it with like, you see it in later seasons too, like the big sigh.
Yes.
Like, he straightens his spine and squares his shoulders and he draws in a deep breath and lets it out in a slow sigh while he's nodding because he's, like, come to a decision on something. Yeah, same thing. Yes, I've written that sentence before.
Oh, God. So now we're going to have to look out for these little acting through breathing moments. I need a catchier term for it. I'll get there eventually.
I think they just call it breath work. I don't know. I'm not an actor at all. I bet, you know who I bet would know is Ness.
Probably, yeah. But I don't just mean like a technical term. Like I need my own funny.
Oh.
Funny term for it.
We'll come up with something.
It's just, Now that I've pointed it out, nobody who listens to this podcast will ever be able to unhear it, see it.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things.
I had to share with you guys. Sorry. Okay.
So we kind of talked in our Wentworth to Ransom a Man's Soul episode. We kind of mentioned Claire giving Jamie asking Jamie to try to stop the Jacobite Rising.
Right.
And so that comes up again. Obviously, that wasn't something that she was just going to ignore, because why would we do that?
Yeah. Dear Jamie, you cannot ever just yes, dear Claire. Like, it does not work with her. Please stop trying.
Don't do that.
Yeah. And so she brings it up again. And yeah, Jamie's definitely kind of like, oh, so you actually want to do that? Claire's like, yeah, duh. And he's like very uncomfortable with like the level of like lies and manipulation that they're going to have to do to pull this off. He's just like, it really doesn't sit right with him. I don't think it sits right with Claire either, but she is just like more determined than he is to stop this. And he's just, and you see it throughout this part, the first half of the season too, where he has times where he's uncomfortable with what he's doing. Mm-hmm. As much as he looked so good in Paris, it's not a good place for him.
They could have just settled in France. Like, they could have stayed in Le Havre. They could have gone literally anywhere else and just stayed out of it.
Yeah.
And they'd have been fine. And so would Jenny and Ian and the kids.
I think part of it is that, at least early on, like when they first get there, I think a big part of it is Jamie's trauma. And like, Jack Randall took away Jamie's freedom to be in Scotland. Yes. Like, and that happened before season one ever even started. Like, mm-hmm. he took away Jamie's right to live freely in Scotland. And then all of this other stuff has happened. And I think Jamie is just so single-mindedly, like, he is going to reclaim Scotland. Like, he is going to get back there because that is his home, and he's sick of it being taken away from him.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of the trauma he just went through, but also just part of, like, an ongoing, like, frustration with how his homeland was basically taken away from him. So I think that's why he doesn't want to just like settle in France or anything. Plus Myrta would just not be happy.
I mean, it would be funny for the rest of Myrta's life.
Happy Myrta, happy life. If Myrta ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
But Jamie does ask her as she's laying out, we can try to stop it as the fantastic plan. He's like, well, shouldn't we try to win then? Like, that's where my brain would have gone too. Like, why would we try to? Because now I like the idea. Can we maybe improve upon it?
Right. Which is logical, makes sense. But also, like, I mean, I think Claire's just wants to avoid a war altogether, right?
Yeah, like, she's had enough.
You know, Jamie's like, in Jamie's mind, he's like, oh, you know, a little war might be fun, you know, kick a little British ass, you know, but Claire's just, you know, and like, she does point out, like, she doesn't know, she knows, like, very, like, the Cliff Notes of the Cliff Notes of the Cliff Notes version. So that's not really feasible. But they make the decision. That's what they're going to do. So here they are in Paris. The only other thing I'd like to say, though, about when they're in this first part of being in Paris is the way they treat Myrta. They talk to him like he's an idiot.
Yeah, like, they do.
They're like, we're just going to tell you this, and we're just going to expect you to, like, be like, okay. And then he's like, points out, like, holes in their logic, and they're like, oh, but this. And again, it's like, I'm not a fucking idiot. Like,
he knows they're up to something. Yeah.
Yeah. But they keep trying to, like, placate him like a child. Mm-hmm. And he's not a dumb man. Like, stop treating him like one, you know?
And, like, the fact that they're not trusting him with the information about Claire or even what they're doing, the fact that they're not trusting him. Now, granted, probably not a good idea to tell Myrta that you're, like, an unofficial official, like, double, triple agent or whatever. like not actually a Jacobite, but a Jacobite, but not. But really, no, it's okay. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Like, okay, that would not sit well with Myrta. Got it. But they could have tried to talk to him. Like, could have been, it could have gone better. I did notice something. I got a little bit excited. This is a complete random detail. As Jamie and Claire have come to the decision / agreement that they're going to try to stop the rebellion altogether. Jamie's leaving the room and he swears in Gaelic. And what he says is Mach na Gala, which means son of a bitch. Random shit. I know. Yes, I know that for a fic.
Oh, Jamie. But with Myrta, though, they told him that they were going to be like triple double agents, right? Like, I'm pretty sure they told him the whole plan and they just like left out the reason why, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Because basically they don't want to tell him that Claire knows what's going to happen.
And that's the part that he might actually get. Like, come on. That's the thing he might actually understand.
Well, and if the exile is canon, he already knows pretty mm-hmm. much that she's like a fairy or a witch or a time. Like, he doesn't know all the specifics, but like he already knows. He's the first one that saw her come through the stones.
Right.
So
he knows they're lying. Even without that, he knows they're lying.
Right. Yeah.
Or hiding something or lying by omission, that kind of thing. Anyway.
I mean, and Myrta is like the last freaking person who's going to like accuse Claire of like being a witch and try to burn her at the stake. Like, come on.
And honestly, even if he thought she was a witch, he wouldn't care.
No, he wouldn't.
Wouldn't care.
The whole secrecy with him is just really.
It doesn't make any sense. I know. I do like how that comes to a close, though, but I'll save that for later.
Okay.
So that more or less concludes our synopsis, not synopsis recap kind of thing. How about some things that just don't make sense?
Okay. How the hell did Frank find someone to authenticate that dress so quickly?
Without carbon dating.
Right, like.
Which wouldn't have worked anyway.
Like, he just knows a guy? Like, like, oh, it's fine. I got, like, a 18th century authenticator guy.
He probably does. He's an historian. It's wild that it's so fast that he was able to get it there and back so fast, but like, I don't know.
But like, he has a guy in Scotland. Like, yeah, like,
I don't think he was in Scotland. I think he was in probably Oxford
with the dress.
Yeah, it was because I think he'd shipped it because it was a letter that he got. So like, the postal system at the time was way better than it is now. Like, way more efficient, and it would run multiple times a day.
True, but like, to send it all the way to Oxford, like, I don't know.
It's a day's drive.
It's sus. It's a little sus. All right. So, also, we have to name our non-canon ship of the week.
I vote Frank Rev.
I agree. I mean, I think it's just an obvious one, right? Like, yeah. It just makes sense.
I was trying to find a way to make it more cursed. Because it's me. And I've got an idea bubbling in my brain that I think was fairly vomit-inducing. But I think I'm going to save it for later. For now.
Well, and I think an honorable mention, though, is, even though he's not in this episode, is Jamie and Pierre.
Oh, right? Of course.
Because we got to remember that Jamie is going back to Paris right now, where you know, Pierre was his like first lover. These, it's full of memories for him. I'm sure there's like tons of places, you know, where he and Pierre had little trysts and such. So, I mean, definitely needs to get an honorable mention for this episode.
One, Pierre always gets an honorable mention. You know, maybe that's why he agreed to go to Paris so willingly. Is it? Maybe Pierre's still there.
True. I'm sure it was, well, I don't know if it would have been on his mind because he had a lot of other shit on his mind.
He had a lot of shit on his mind, but you know.
But you know, you never know. You never know. Crazier things have happened. So how can I explain this? So for those of you that listened to the finale, hopefully all of you, we did a little thing where we were kind of like vibing fix, I think is the best way to put it, to, you know, some success, some not success, but it's all good. But I kind of thought it'd be fun if we did that as a regular segment on the show. And I started it out by saying, like, what fic did you put on your Dead on Arrival list this week?
That is what you meant, like, by DOA. Okay.
Yes. Because, like, you know, we all as writers, maybe everyone, I guess everyone else does too, like, comes up with these constant little, like, what ifs, what if, what if, right? And we've all got a list. We've all got another list of fics we want to write someday. But then there's also like those ideas that come into your head and instantly you're just like, that is never going to see the light of day, but it's a cool idea. So that's where this segment comes from. From the annals of our, the brains. Annals of the cesspool of our brains.
Cesspool.
Oh, God.
Well, do you have one for the week?
I actually do not, but I was really glad to see that. And part of that is because I've been writing fic for another fandom, so I don't have as much Outlander ideas constantly in my head right now. But I see that you had one.
Well, first of all, I can't make them stop. Second of all, I never say never, but I am beginning, right. Like, I look at my idea folder and I'm beginning to have like mortality concerns. Anyway, so this one actually popped into my head while I was rewatching the episode yesterday, thinking they could have just stayed in Lahav. Like, they did not need to go to Paris. They didn't need to do this. There was no, like, it just cockamamie. Like, this didn't make any sense. What if they had settled in Paris? I'm like, well, that's boring. How can I get John in here? Well, somehow, and I don't feel like this would be super far-fetched, but I can actually see Jamie and John running into each other on opposite ends of a battlefield.
In France?
Mm-hmm. In, like, in the future. Not, well, like,
Oh, I see.
For, like, the Seven Years' War. That's coming up, and John fought in that war.
Right.
And I can see them.
Right,
because, you know, Jamie, he's not going to retire at the ripe old age of 23, 24. Hell to the no. He's not going to retire. He'll find something else to do.
And he's certainly not going to stay a spy because he doesn't really like it.
He doesn't really care for it. He kind of likes fighting a little bit. Like, he likes having a purpose. He likes having something that he feels he can do. So, yeah, I can see that. I could see that happening.
If he does do some spying during the Seven Years' War, that would be so cool. If, like, John captures him spying and they have, like, this whole, like, cat and mouse fucking thing going. Oh, that's good shit right there. I would eat that.
So I was just thinking, like, they find each other on opposite ends of the battlefield and for whatever reason end up not killing each other. But now I'm liking where you're going, because this lasts a lot longer and it crosses over with Percy.
Yes. Yes.
Because Percy and John were counter spies. That would be so, well, counter intelligence, whatever the word they use is.
Right, right. And Jamie could somehow be, like, melded into that whole story with Percy and his spying and all of that.
I can see Jamie and Percy knowing each other because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, that'd be so cool. I love it.
Someone's welcome to write that. I'm probably not going to.
Yes, I'm not either. So there you go. Please just give us a little please just give us a little credit for the prompt.
Never say never, but hey, two cakes. So yeah, go for it. How about our mail call before we wrap this up?
Nice. I won't sing again. I want you to, sure? But I won't.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. So this one came from Tumblr. It actually came in a spontaneous ask from Tumblr user Little Crabs with two Bs. I've just started listening to this podcast, and I know you guys are going in chronological order, but I need your guys' opinion on the scene in Brotherhood of the Blade where John and Jamie have their fight in the stable. Please. Because it's like this weird time before the Scottish Prisoner happens and Jamie gets to know John more. And I think the development of Jamie's comfort around John is so interesting. Like, while traveling from the prison to Hellwater, Jamie stays awake all night listening to John, hoping he would do something offensive or disrespectful so that Jamie had an excuse to kill him. But nah, John just snored the whole night, laughing face emoji.
Jamie so is such a baby.
He is such a child. So I kind of see that as an instance of Jamie realizing John is trustworthy. I don't even know. Either way, please talk about the stable scene. That scene is so wild to me, but obviously insight into Jamie's opinion, but obviously insightful into Jamie's opinion on John's gayness.
Yes. And if you don't know what she's asking about, if you haven't read Brotherhood of the Blade, you should, but also there is a scene towards the end of that book, and you know, I think the show is kind of like pretty misleading about their Jamie and John's friendship throughout his time at Hellwater, because the show goes so quickly, it just makes it seem like, you know, immediately they're just like chess buddies, right? Like,
yeah.
But Jamie was still incredibly angry at John when he got to Hellwater, and they were on very tenuous formal terms.
Yeah,
for most of Jamie's time at Hellwater.
Well, there was always that power imbalance between them,
right? Of course, yeah. So this is kind of a part of the climax of the whole of the book, but they have this scene in Brotherhood of the Blade where they, I can't even remember how it came up, to be honest, but they started arguing. Oh, you take it away.
So, complete spoiler for Brotherhood of the Blade, which we've already given you a spoiler warning. John is very distraught because Percy, his lover, has been arrested for sodomy, but he was with somebody else. And John is not sure what to do. You know, what's the honorable thing? And so he wants to talk to Jamie because Jamie is a relatively right. safe person to talk to about this, because Jamie already knows that he's gay. So they get into an argument about, like, can men love each other? That sort of thing. And John's got receipts, and Jamie kind of doesn't, and he gets flustered, and it really just kind of devolves into just this nasty argument. And John says something to Jamie that triggers him, and what was the line? I can probably get it verbatim. Were I to take you to my bed, I could make you scream, and believe me, I would do it.
Yeah.
I think that is pretty close to verbatim. And he meant it in, like, not, he didn't mean it in a rapey way. The way I just said it, it came out kind of rapey, but that's not how he meant it, of course. But it triggered Jamie.
Yeah.
And he throws a punch that probably would have killed John if it had connected. And there is this whole, like, did Jamie miss intentionally? Did John move? It's nasty. And then they don't speak again for a whole year until Hal sends them on their couples retreat to Ireland.
Sorry.
It's funny. I mean, it is. Back to the Scottish prisoner. So whenever I think about this scene, I can't think about it in a vacuum. Like, it's not just this scene for me. It's also, there's an additional scene in The Scottish Prisoner where Jamie is reflecting on this. Because they never talk about it. They never talk about it. They need to. Mm-mm. But in The Scottish Prisoner, Jamie is reflecting that he stopped seeing John. Like, John went away and all he could see was Randall. So it was a full on, like, post-traumatic stress disorder, like actual flashback he was having. And it almost ended really, really badly. Like, in like a very final sort of fatal way.
Yeah.
And he realized, like, we don't know this until The Scottish Prisoner, when he's done, you know, shitting himself about not actually going to the Tower of London. But we don't realize that that's actually what was happening. He knows that John never would have hurt him, and that's not what John meant. He knows that's not what John meant. But such is his trauma response.
Yeah. And I think part of the question is about some of the stuff that Jamie also says to John before John even, he says the thing about making Jamie scream and stuff is because when they're going back and forth about, you know, whether or not, basically Jamie is saying that, like, a man can never love another man kind of, for lack of a better word, purely, right? Like, a man would love his wife. And we all know, to Jamie, like, that is, like, a really deep part of his person, is that, you know, he is how much he loves Claire and thinks, he always talks about, you know, marriage being a sacrament and just all of those things. So he doesn't believe that two men in a relationship could ever achieve that type of love, that it's really very much all about the physical. And for Jamie, it's very much about violence, because that is all he has ever known.
Yeah.
When it comes to two men being together physically. Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, because, like, not just with Randall, but if you think about just his entire life of, like, you know, men battling each other, like, he can't conceive of the notion that two men could actually love each other in the way that Jamie loves his wife. And he says some pretty homophobic stuff.
He says some heinous shit.
Period typical, but very heinous, very...
Doesn't make it right.
No, you know, just very awful stuff. But I think the important thing to focus on with that is, again, part of why he thinks those things is because of his lived experience. You know, he's not just, like, your run-of-the-mill homophobic 18th century guy. He is
A deeply traumatized.
That he's actually had experience with having that, being assaulted by a man. And so that's all he knows. That's all he can think of and that he knows of that. And I'm not excusing it at all. Like, the stuff he says is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see where it comes from with him.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know if I've ever said it on the podcast before or not. I don't think I have. But Jamie's fight or flight response is fight.
Yeah.
So when he gets triggered, he gets violent. And unfortunately, John accidentally does this a couple of times in the course of their friendship / acquaintance, however you want to put it. What's interesting about this one, though, is in this particular scene when Jamie throws that punch, John can see it. He sees the disconnect mm-hmm. from, like, reality when Jamie throws that punch. And so he's not mad at Jamie for throwing the punch. He's mad and hurt by what Jamie said before that. But he can see there's a internal monologue. This is from John's perspective, because we never get Jamie's point of view in the book when they're in the same scene. It drives me insane. That's another rant for another day. But after John leaves the stable and he says, "Oh God, somebody already has."
Right. And I mean, John's a victim or a survivor,
yeah,
of sexual assault too, which is mentioned earlier in Brotherhood of the Blade. So it is set up by the author so that, you know, once he makes the realization that something has happened to Jamie, he has like a very visceral reaction to it.
Yeah. I love the question. I would love to talk more about Brotherhood of the Blade. I really would love to do a reread.
I know.
Season of book club.
Well, you know, maybe we could do some little, take a little break between season 2 and season 3 and do a little book club.
Or but season 3 season is three and, when
I yeah, know.
Sweet, no, I can't. Know. I'm holding on, like, just we're almost there. One more season. Like, I'm clinging to the goal. Eye on the prize.
Maybe we could do it as, like, interludes in season 3, because that's when a lot of the events are actually happening.
True.
In the Lord John books, yeah.
Between two episodes.
You know, we could figure it out. Whatever. Figure that magical out. Timelines. Yeah. So
thank you, Little Crabs, again
for writing. We don't have a thick rec this week, and it's kind of hard to come up with a fic every week, but we were also hoping that maybe if you don't have a question for us to send us, maybe you have a fic rec that you think might be a good match with one of our upcoming episodes for season 2. So you could also send us your fic recs, and maybe we'll feature your fic rec on a future episode if we don't have one ourselves, which happens quite frequently. Yeah. And
if you wrote it, that's okay. Promote yourself.
Yes.
We're absolutely happy to do that. Like, we promote do it yourself. All the time. We do it for ourselves. Like, promote yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally do that.
Remember to give us feedback, ask us questions, submit a fic rec. You can do so on social media. Tumblr, Twitter are the best for that. Or go to our website to the contact us page, which is lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact-us. And you can reach us there. We really hope that we'll hear from more of you during this season.
Yeah, we are on Tumblr, lordjohnlander.tumblr.com. You're welcome to come find us there, follow us. We can't reply from that blog. It's a side blog that we share. But we're also on Twitter and TikTok and the Insta. Well, I say we, but Beth does all of those because I'm a social media idiot.
Don't message us on TikTok because I have been very neglectful of our TikTok and it's a very good chance that it won't be seen in a timely manner. But yeah, Instagram's okay too, and Twitter and Tumblr for sure. And you can use the ask feature on the Tumblr. It's probably the best way on Tumblr.
Absolutely. And make sure you're following us on Tumblr and or Twitter so that you can get links to the Fic Recs when we have them. And you can join the conversation.
You can also subscribe just to our website too. So
yeah. All right. Well, hey, welcome back to season one. Or season one? Nope. Welcome back. I'm tired too. I have a lot of editing to do. Welcome back to Lord John Luner, season two. We're so glad you're here. Do you have anything else before we close tonight, Beth?
No, let me just see if my dogs have anything else to say. Hey, assholes. You got anything else to say? They are all passed out.
Lucky them.
I'll put a picture on social media of my dogs
passed out. Let's see the one that was growling.
I can't even. Oh my god. I'll tell you more about Petey some other time.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
If you're listening to this, it means you survived another episode of Lord John Luner. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Tumblr at Lord John Luner or on our website at lordjohnluner.wordpress.com/contact-us.
All opinions expressed on the Lord John Luner podcast belong to us and are not affiliated with Outlander, Sony, Stars, and definitely 100% not with Diana Gabaldon.
This podcast is not suitable for children, immature adults, homophobes, anyone who takes fandom seriously, people who don't understand that the characters aren't real, people with sticks up their ass, people who hate fun, and people with no sense of humor. Do not try any of these hot takes at home. We are professionals.
And if you know us in real life, no, you don't.